We all call the meeting to order. Join me in the pledge. Stand. Salute, pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we'll start with the superintendent's update.
Okay, I just want to see if everybody can hear. Ange, can you give me a thumbs up if you can hear? Yeah, thank you. Okay. I have a few things to report tonight. First of all, our attendance. I wanted to let you know that we've had a significant absentee problem due to multiple factors. Obviously, some of them are positive COVID cases. Many of them are close contacts prior to masking, so they are all at home. And then we have some symptomatic students that are sent home. And then, of course, normal family absences, you know, doctor's appointments, dentist appointments, those types of things. We are also experiencing a number of employees out each day, and we're finding it nearly impossible to fill all of our open positions with substitutes, both classified and certificated. It looks like we're seeing the student absences improving. So, for example, on Friday, Wheatland-L had 161 students out, and today that number was cut in half down to 82. So hopefully we're seeing it back on the swing to having students in school. Our current numbers are as follows. We currently have, this is for yearly totals, we had 19 staff members that have tested positive for COVID. 6 are still out, 13 have returned. Of those 19, 10 of them are classified, 4 are still out, 6 have returned, and then 9 are certificated, 2 are still out, and 7 have returned. District-wide, we've had 53 students test positive for the year. 32 of them are still out, and 21 have returned. At Bear River, there's 20 students, 12 are out, 8 return. At Wheatland-L, it's where we've been hit the hardest, 26 students out. I'm sorry, 26 students with COVID, 13 out, and 13 have returned. And then Lone Tree was 0 last week, but they have 7, and so they're all currently out. So 7 out and 0 returned. Middle school sports. Bear River is working with other local school districts regarding sports. The new guidelines came out last week regarding athletics and the need to test athletes weekly for COVID, and also the other significant factor that came in the CDPH guidance was for all indoor sports, examples, volleyball, basketball, they are going to be required to wear a facial covering while playing, not just sitting on the bench. The only exception to that is if the facial covering in that sport could be a choking hazard. They're also requiring all players on the bench to wear facial coverings and all spectators. At this time, all sports in all of the facilities that we play, including ours, will limit spectators to just family members, and of the players only, no other students would be allowed to attend at this time, trying to keep the numbers down.
Good question on that.
Yes, absolutely.
What kind of liability is that? I mean, running and up and down and breathing in your own. I mean, to me, I see a lot of kids going down with doing that. I mean, obviously they have parent consent if they're playing, but I'm just wondering what, I mean, if we're following the guidelines, what our liability is, because that seems very dangerous to me.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Two things. One, we're following guidelines, so the liability would fall onto the state, not onto the district. And second, the parents would have to agree to when their child plays a sport. But yeah, it's definitely interesting the way it's been done prior to this guidance coming out in the high schools that we're playing is when, let's just take volleyball, for example, when the kids were on the court playing, they didn't have a mask on, but when they came to the sidelines and sat on the bench, they had to put one on, but they've changed that now. And I think it has a lot to do with the contact tracing. If you have a child who played even, you know, in a game and then came out positive COVID, they have to shut the whole team down if they weren't wearing masks. Now they would do that modified COVID, I guess. I don't know, modified COVID. So again, we just received the language last week, and Rick White's been meeting with the other districts, and looks like it's a go to have some sports happening, which is important. Obviously the outside sports, flag football, cross country, those types of things, they would not have to wear masks. Distant learning requests or virtual requests after the last meeting. Not all of these are related to mask mandates, however. We currently have 7 students at Bear River in grades 4 through 8 requesting to go into a virtual academy, for lack of a better term. 1's a 4th grader, 2 6th graders, 2 7th graders, and 2 8th graders. And we have 5 students at Wheatland L, 2 are in kindergarten, 2 are in 1st grade, and 1 in 2nd grade. We have 0 requests at Lone Tree. I'm working on an MOU with Plumas Lake so that our 4th through 8th grade students can join their virtual school. And it, you know, given the numbers at the lower grades, I'm not sure it makes any sense at all to have a virtual school for TK through 3. Kindergarten is not required, so if you took those 2 out, now you're down to 3 kids. So I'll bring more on that once we've worked through the process with Clueless Lake. Testing supplies. So our nurse, Angela Waltz, has been working on trying to get rapid COVID tests for our students and staff. The companies that are providing these tests are struggling to deliver due to very high demand. Because of this lack of available tests, the county is now allowing students on modified quarantine to only have to be tested once instead of twice a week. So they would test on day 6 from the close contact. And if they tested negative, they're done. The biggest hurdle we're continuing to have with close contacts is exposure in the home or at family events, because they cannot go on a modified quarantine if that's where they were exposed. Our current vaccination verification for staff, we have 221 total employees at this time. 145, or 66% of them, have verified as being vaccinated. Employees not verified or unvaccinated, which I can't say one or the other because I don't know, so we're going to say not verified or unvaccinated, 76, which is 34%. And then Nikki and I attended the 2x2x2 committee. For those of you who don't know, that's the committee that's made up of 2 of our board members and myself, 2 of the high school board members and Nicole, and 2 of the city council members and the head of the city. So they talked a little bit or a lot about projects. I'm just going to mention the short-term projects because they labeled them as short-term, mid-term, and long-term projects. So the short-term projects right now, Calatera Ranch, which is across kind of kitty corner from Bear River, across from the cemetery. Thank you. They have 552 single family units, 4 acres of commercial, 5 acres of park, and 2 acres for a future fire station that are slotted for that area. K-Hub Homes purchased phase 1, which is 145 total lots. As you've driven by, I'm sure you've driven by there, you see a lot of work being done. So the infrastructure improvements have begun. They're expecting to have the model homes done by the end of this year. They're selling the first 50 homes in 2022. The additional 95 lots that K-Hub owns require a final map and are anticipated to begin construction in 2023 and 2024.
Where is that one located?
It's all there.
Okay.
Yeah. So they have like what they call Village 1 and Village 2. So Village 1 is 50. They also, the city talked about the First Street senior housing project. So there's a 2-acre lot at the corner of First and E Street. They're going to put 32 units in phase one. And then another 20 units in phase two on that 2-acre lot. The city staff currently is reviewing the proposed plan. No work has begun. Bear Ridge Family Apartment Project. So there's a 9-acre corner lot along Spenceville, east of Main Street and west of McCurry Street.
Farmersfield.
So there's two phases with this project. Approximately 48 multifamily apartments in each of the phases. Again, city staff currently reviewing the proposed plan of the first phase. They have actually reached out to us to find out what our developer fees would be for that. So they're moving down the road on that apartment complex.
Who sets the developer?
Well, they're set by the state and then they move, but we have that on our agenda for tonight, actually. And then the last one.
And those are all low income, correct?
I believe that is right. Thank you. Main Street and State Route 65. There's a proposal to put a 76 gas station project in place. If you're wondering where that is, they're going to remove the existing Elkins Frosty.
And they bought the house behind.
So they're going to probably remove both, construct a 2,500 square foot 76 gas station with 8 gas pumps. City and staff are currently reviewing the application submittal. The owner has a long ways to go to get this through the public process. So, but that's the plan. The guy who bought Elkins is planning on tearing it down and putting a gas station. So other than that, that was pretty much the 2x2. There's a lot of other discussion about the highway and going down Jasper and the sewer, moving it out of Wheatland. It would be run by OPUD and running the sewer down Jasper. But those are all longer term projects and require quite a bit of money to make happen. Probably the shorter term of all of the city game projects is they're going to go and change everybody's water meter to a water meter that is, for lack of a better term, cellular or something, so they can just get your meters without people having to come and read them. And then they're not going to take down the water tower, but they're going to stop using the water tower and have another system for water. It's so efficient. So
the high school also asked them to do a new traffic study for Wheatland Road because Nicole said it's taken her like 32 minutes to get there, in which I know my daughter drives that every day and drops off at the high school, and it goes all the way back past Oakley lots of times. So because with the new housing development before the Village 2 goes in, they wanted a new housing study. And then they were discussing taking Oakley all the way through, all the way out to the highway down. It would go straight through that property all the way through. So I don't know how that is going to be right now.
No, Oakley would come by Bishop's.
Yeah.
In the backside of the. And then get to the highway that way, so they would bypass going through town. Be another exit, but
that was a longer term with the second phase.
Bishop's has purchased property over next to Bishop's, and they're so they're looking at how that's all going to be impacted. Those are things that you're probably talking 10 to 15, 20 years down the road, which who knows what will happen. But the three or four that I mentioned are things that are in the works right now. So,
which those apartments that are the multifamily will affect our numbers,
yes,
most likely. The senior pro- probably not so much, but the new houses definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the enrollment report. So currently, at the time of the report, we had 1,368 students. That is 83 students more than we had last year at this time, and 8 students less than we had in August, which we expected because sometimes kids are on the rolls, but they actually never come. They've moved over the summer or whatever. So, and then we have 142 students in the preschool program, which is 55 more than we had last year this time. We have a total of 1,510 if you count all of our students, which is 138 more than we had last year.
Bless those preschool
teachers. So that's all I have for our superintendent's report and for the enrollment report.
Okay. Any comments or questions before we move on to the Healthy Kids Survey? Okay, we will go to Mrs. Guzman for the Healthy Kids Survey.
Hi. Nick, do you have my slides for this?
No.
No.
Oh, sorry, Nick.
I do not.
Okay.
Wrong Nick. Sorry.
Are they not?
Sorry, Sherry.
Were they emailed to me or what? Oh.
I sent them to Melissa and Craig.
On the board agenda, they're listed down below. Oh, there, the current board agenda on the side.
Where am I going?
To the right.
Then go on to. That page, and then go to the next page. I'll click on the green, and then you'll share that. That one.
Just so you're prepared, Sherry, I'm going to ask you for previous year's numbers on a couple things.
I will not have those at the moment, but I'm happy to find those for you.
Okay.
Now, can you see it now, Sherry?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So every other year, our seventh graders take an anonymous survey that I get through Yuba County Office of Education called the California Healthy Kids Survey. So last year we had 134 students in seventh grade, 105 took the California Healthy Kids Survey online in their science classes. In our results, 83% of our students clicked that they were in the hybrid model. 7% said they were in distance learning, and 10% didn't respond. So when we look at our results, they're a little bit off because 7% were not fully distance learning. We didn't offer the survey to our distance learning students that were in HBIS. Okay, so I took some of the different sections to kind of, not all of them, there's a lot. But I just wanted to highlight some of them. The first one is adult support, and it says, how true do you feel these statements are about your family? And then the first one is, there's an adult who really cares about me. And there's 89% of our students said very much true or pretty much true. And when you're dealing with seventh graders, I think that's an amazing number that we're getting so many people that say that they have a positive relationship with their family. And then they ask if they have an adult who they can talk to about their problems. And remember, this was specific about their family, so it says 61%. And if we've all had to deal with our own families, we know that sometimes it's easier to talk to somebody who's not a family member. And then there's an adult who can help me when I'm having a hard time, and it says 66%. It is anonymous, so I don't ever know who is answering a certain way if they're being honest. But I mean, it looks good so far. The next one is about bullying. So this was during the past 12 months. So this would encompass their distance learning year and their hybrid year. So have they been made fun of because of their looks or the way that they talk? And 61% said that happened zero times, and 39% said that that would happen one or more times. So focusing on, you know, getting kids to stop doing those types of behaviors. And having your property stolen or deliberately damaged, 91% that said that never happened, and 9% said one or more times. Same with making fun of each other or being insulted or called names, 52% said zero, 48% said one or more. And then the one about the cell phones or rumors or things like that being spread online, zero times was 70%. And one or more times was 30%. So we have seen kind of a rise in online bullying. So those numbers actually surprised me that, you know, 70% said that had never happened to them. Alcohol and drugs was the next one. I was pleasantly surprised with these numbers because I think in the past, and Nikki, I don't know if this is what you were referring to, we've seen different numbers in these categories. And like I said, it is anonymous, so I don't know how true it is. But having tried alcohol, 83% said zero times. And then trying marijuana, 93% said zero times. Inhalants, 96% said zero.
I was going to ask those go ahead. As well. I thought those were great numbers, but that's not my question. But yeah, okay. I thought they were great too.
I thought it was really good. And then given that, you know, part of their year was distance learning and part of it was hybrid, I don't know if that changed the numbers at all. But it was nice to see those because the students are very well informed that it is anonymous. For marijuana, again, how many times have you used in your life and smoking it? 94% said zero. Vaping, 94% said zero. And then eating or drinking products made with marijuana, so edibles, 96% said zero. Which again, thought I was very pleasantly surprised by that. The cigarettes and vaping was the section that I expected to see higher numbers. But we didn't. Using cigarettes or smoking, and I attend my quarterly TUPE meetings about cigarettes. The focus used to be on cigarettes and how to get kids to stop smoking, but we've kind of changed our outlook onto more vaping. And I know the high school has different groups. Prior to COVID, the high school would come over and do some lessons for our eighth graders on no smoking and no vaping. Given the current COVID restrictions, we haven't had that opportunity in about a year and a half, but that's something we can look into in the future. But used a vape product, 9. And this one got cut off, so it doesn't say percentages, but
I think it's 9%
as well. 9%. And then cessation attempts, so quitting, there were no answers for that. And then knowing the harmfulness of cigarette smoking, only 28%. So that one is always worrisome. But smoking doesn't seem to be targeted at the teenagers as much as vaping is right now. But they do know that 65% said that they do understand the harmfulness of vaping several times a day. On the side, I put... it got cut off when I put this on the slide, but it said 17% said they didn't know there was an anti-tobacco policy. So we do have signage on campus, and we do have a group that's working on some commercials for BRTV so we can get, you know, more information out there about this. So I see that as an issue that we need to make sure that people don't that they do realize that there is an anti-tobacco policy. And then the last one being mental health. This one, it's always a hard one to see as an educator, to see that our students are struggling with mental health. So the chronic sad or hopeless feelings in the past 12 months, 44% said yes, that they had had some sort of sadness or hopeless feelings, which really makes sense given that we were in distance learning in a pandemic. That makes sense. And then seriously considered attempting suicide, 29% said yes. And so
those numbers I'd like to see from the past, just to compare to, you know, regular day and regular school as compared to the situation we're going through now, like you said. I'm just curious to see what those numbers look like. If you could find those for me, that would be awesome.
I will tell you that pre-COVID, we Mrs. Loopy, our school counselor, and if we ever had a student that was having suicidal ideations or considering suicide, it was something that we would meet with them together. And it was more than we would think. It was more kids than we would ever think were struggling with that. So that is all I have for that survey. I'm happy to kind of go back a couple of years and see, Nikki, if those numbers are different or if the pandemic really shot those numbers up or down either way.
Yeah, no hurry. Just when you have a chance, that would be great.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Sherry on that? Okay. We'll move on to communication from the public. You're just here to enjoy yourself. Okay. Anybody online have any questions or comments of things that are not on the agenda?
No.
Okay. We will move on to the consent agenda. Any questions or comments on anything in the consent agenda? If not, I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
First and second, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We'll move on to our first item, which is information. We're going to have a public hearing for the certification of instructional materials as per Education Code 60119.
So you have to go into a public hearing.
So we are in a public hearing. So if anybody has any questions, concerns, comments on this for educational materials.
So we, I'll just clarify that because 5.2 will be when the board takes action, but we currently have sufficient textbooks and instructional materials for all of our students. We are not lacking in any of those areas. So that's every year this has to come forward in case we had a lack. Now we do have a shipping issue at Lone Tree on science, but it will get sorted out, but they are somewhere. That's what we're here for on the public hearing. So if there's no public comments, you can go out.
Okay, we'll close the hearing and we'll go to 5.2 action item, adopt resolution 212201 regarding funding for pupil textbook and instructional material incentive program, certification of instructional materials per Education Code section 60119.
I make a motion that we accept 5.2.
First?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll move on to action item 5.3. Approve the 2021 unaudited actual financial report and budget revisions for the 1920 contained therein.
Okay, so, Did you say aspirin time?
No, tic-tac.
Tic-tac time. Okay, so this is the unaudited actual, so this is the time of year that we bring forward last year's books. We're closing books. we go to close the books and audit it, and then we'll have our auditor go through the books, and you'll get that at a later time. So go to the first page. So first we talk about the revenues that we received in 2021. So the revenues came in through LCFS sources, Federal Reserve, other state, and other local. And you can see the lion's share of the money that we receive in a school district comes from the LCFF, and the second largest is our federal. Moving on. So in the LCFF, we received $13,089,440, which is 65% of our revenue. And that comes through property taxes, EPA, and other state funding. And then the EPA, I've explained this a lot, but I'll explain it again. What the government did at one point is they took money out of one pocket and they put it in the other, they call it EPA. So it was voted on by the voters, and so it all has to be spent. The $4.5 million has to be spent on teacher salaries and benefits, which is easy for us to do. We spend all of that on teacher salaries and benefits. It is not additional money, it is money part of the LCFF. Federal revenue, we received just about $3.7 million, which is 18% of our revenue. 2.2 of it comes in the form of Impact Aid, Department of Defense, and MAW, which is medical. And then 1.5 million came through grants and categoricals that are restricted to those programs. And then the CARES dollars, which you can call them whatever you want, it's the COVID-related money, they came in at 1.5, so a total of 3.7 million. Then other state, we received 242,000 for lottery money, and then 1.9 million in Prop 20 lottery, mental health, more, this is state grants, and then state COVID money. So a total of 2.1 million or 11% of our revenue. So a breakdown of the CARES money or COVID money. So these are each of the different funding mechanisms that have come in or are going to come in. So we had ESSER I, which the majority of that has been received. It's our anticipated amount was 151,000, and we received 148,000. ESSER II was 603,000, and we have only received 60,000. ESSER III is 801,000, and we received zero. ESSER III learning loss is 200,000, and we received zero. And then, let's see, the other ones, most we've received most of the other monies with the exception of about, 200,000 of the IPA grant out of almost 500,000, 400,000 of the ELO grant, which is the expanded learning opportunities of the 785,000. So we're our anticipated amount that the district will get in one-time dollars is 3.9 million. What we received in 2021, which we're booking, is almost 1.6 million. So you can see there's about $2.4 million that is still owed to the district through these COVID dollars. One of the reasons that we were able to extend all of our paras to 5 hours and all of that was these COVID dollars. So other local, which is 6% of our revenue, which is 1.1 million, comes from interagency services, interest, and then the big chunk comes from after school fees, and then our special education money that comes to us and then turns around and goes back to the county, but 838,000 in that area. So our total revenues for 2021 was $20,073,983. This does not include $663,000 that the state owes us for deferrals of last year, and then the $2.3 million that they owe us for the federal and state CARES funds. So those will hopefully come during this year and will be booked next year. So we move on to expenditures. The majority of our money obviously goes into people. So our certificated salaries, our classified salaries, and our employee benefits make up the lion's share of where we spend our money. And then, of course, books and supplies, other services, capital outlay, and indirect costs, et cetera. So our certificated salaries, we spend $7.1 million, which is 40% of our budget, on certificated salaries. Classified salaries, we spend $3.4 million, which is 20% of our expenditures. And this will be the first time, if you go to the next one, first time ever that our employee benefits have cost more than our classified salaries, which is an interesting one. I think it will change, but part of that is because we didn't replace classified people as they left during the pandemic, and so our numbers are lower there, which they're back up now, as you can tell by the number of employees that we have. So 21% of our expenditures goes to that. Books and supplies, we spent $1.4 million, so 8%. Now, that is going to also include things like computers and all that that we bought for students, so that's a higher number than you're used to seeing. Services and other operating expenses is $1.4 million, so that's 8% of our expenditures. And then other outgo, so we transfer money to YCOE for special ed and excess costs in the neighborhood of $500,000, which is 3% of our expenditures. And then our indirect costs, so the county takes away from the LCFF the first $140,000, so that goes to them, that's why it's a negative. And then we bring in for our indirect about $116,000 from cost of running grants and things like that. So we're in the red by about $25,000 on indirect costs, which is expected. So what have we spent in the CARES money? So we spent $1.5 million, basically, of the CARES money. Almost all of the ESSER one is accounted for, and then you can see the rest of the numbers. So our total expenditures this year was $17,661,939. So then we have some other financial sources. So we'll move on to that. Contributions. So special education, $1.2 million. Routine restricted maintenance, $537,000. And title, $7,000. So that money that is in our general fund, but has to be put aside for those amounts.
What is the restricted maintenance?
Routine restricted maintenance, you are required to put a certain percentage of money of your budget. So the larger your budget, the larger that number would be to make sure that you keep your buildings up. So. And then other funding sources, we paid $9,000 out for free breakfast and $25,000 contribution over the preschool program to help with parent educators. And that's kind of offset because they also generate impact aid money for us. So we have a net increase in the general fund balance this year of $2,378,044 of an increase. Most of that is because we didn't have sub costs and we didn't replace employees, et cetera, but it's definitely something to be happy about. So to reconcile, when we did the estimated actuals the last time we did, we came to you and said we were going to overspend by $838,000. We ended up underspending by $2,378,000, so a difference of $1.5 million. Most of that, $2 million of it, was expenditure savings. And then we did have a decrease in revenue of $546,000, and that's because of the deferrals. So our general fund balance is now at 7.4 $4 million. And then components of the ending fund balance. So we have the revolving cash, which is a basically it's always the same number because the money goes in, the money we write a check out of there, we put it back in. And then we have 6% designated for economic uncertainties, which is $1 million. And then we always keep 1 month's worth of salary and benefits, so that's $3.3 million. We have to put away for accrued vacation, so that's people that have vacation on the books that haven't used them yet. And then lottery, so we have the $1.3 million lottery, which is used mostly for textbook adoptions. And then restricted categoricals, we have just shy of a million in there. So just to show you, I like to bring this slide to each of these to show you what it looks like. So obviously, if there's parentheses around it, that's where we overspent. And if there's no parentheses around it, that means that there was an addition to the general fund. So in 1920, we were deferred $1.2 million, and that came to us in 2021. So that's part of this, too, is that it's 2 years ago money that came forward. And then we have a deferral in 2021, so in these books, of $663,000, which will come forward in 21-22. So when they defer, they just give it to you the next year, usually. Next. So the other funds, charter, they also had an increase in their fund balance by $184,000. Child development has an increase in their fund balance by $99,000. Cafeteria fund was an increase of $63,000. Deferred maintenance is a decrease of $18,000. We did a lot of carpeting this summer, so we used deferred maintenance for that. The special reserve fund, which is federal impact aid dollars that have been here for a while, $2.9 million. There's no increase, it's just interest revenue. Capital facilities fund went up by about $21,000. Special reserve capital outlay. So that's project money, stayed the same, about 2.7, you get interest on that. And then the retiree benefit is $345,000. And we have to fully accrue that every year. And that's it. So financially, it was a good year for what we're seeing, but a lot of that is really due to one-time only pandemic money, and then not spending as much during the pandemic for substitutes and those types of things. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments on the I'm not even gonna try to say it again. $5.3 million. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept $5.3 million.
I'm second it.
First and second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll move on to action item 5.4, adopt the GAN appropriation limit for the 2020, 2021, and 2021 and 2022 fiscal year.
So this is just the GAN limit that we have to bring forward. It's part of the presentation I just gave.
If no questions, I'll entertain a motion to approve 5.4.
Mm-hmm.
First,
second,
all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Okay, we'll move on to 5.5, action item, adopt resolution 2122-03 for petition for the 2021-2022 school year for the teachers listed to teach outside of their credentialed area.
So there are four teachers on this list. They're all, three of them are for art and one of them is for drama. Again, we don't have a credentialed art teacher and we don't have a credentialed drama teacher. So we have others teach that. So that's, we don't have any in any of the other areas that we used to have. So those are the four that we have. And two of them are only for flex class as well.
I was happy to see that they were those classes. Questions, comments? If not, I will entertain a motion to approve 5.5.
So moved. I'll second.
First and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 5.6, approve status changes for employees.
So we have two employees that would move to permanent status because they've been here for 2 years. That's Jennifer Walsh, our psychologist, and Angela Waltz, our nurse. So that's the only status changes for this meeting.
I make a
motion
to approve status changes.
Okay.
First and second, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll go on to 5.7, school facility fees.
So we had a study done. The high school had a study done, and then we decided to do the same study that I think the last time we did it was about 8 years ago. The state has increased the amount that they allow for developer fees. And so based on the study, we're asking that the board increase the previously levied fee of $1.92 for residential and $31 for commercial to $2.45. So it'd be $1.92 to $2.45 and then $31 to $40. The rate set by the state is now $4.08. And in order to raise it to that $4.08, you had to have a study, which is what we did. And then the $4.08 for residential and 66 cents for commercial or industrial. And then the split is 60% goes to the elementary and 40% goes to the high school district. So what was happening is our numbers were lower, but the high school was getting 40% of the 408. So they had already done their study. So the study is there for you. We've posted it. We've sent it out to the city council. I did make any developer that has asked for developer fees aware of that there could be an increase. And I bring that to you for approval.
Can you explain the numbers, the 408 and the 192 that's per?
So 408 is the total that the state will allow for developer fees. So it's $4.08 per square foot that a developer has to pay. So on a house. And then we're able to get 60% of that 408, and the high school's able to get. And these are just school fees. They also have, obviously, city fees and all of those things. But this is just the school fees. But we were not at the 408 because we hadn't done a certain, we weren't having any building happening, so it really didn't make a lot of sense to pay for a survey. So we did that to get our numbers up, and it's, timing is everything, because if they're going to build those houses, the higher amount that we have is better for the school district.
So does it have to go to some other kind of approval besides ours?
No.
Okay. They're also called swirling fees, correct?
Sorry?
Swirling fees, that they call it as well?
I don't know. I haven't heard that term before. Sterling?
Yes.
It's a good question, but not an answer.
Any questions? Comments? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to approve the increase to the school facility fees. Second. First and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. I should explain too that school facility fees can only be used on school facilities. You can't use it for salaries. You can't use it for general maintenance. It's really to increase the capacity at your schools.
The last item is 5.8, action item, increase substitute pay rate.
So we currently pay kind of a sliding scale. We pay $140 for a substitute that's been there 1 to 3 days, and then 3 to 19 days they get $150, and then over 20 days in the same classroom they get $175. We're not attracting substitutes. I don't know that it's totally a focus on money as much as it's just there's no subs out there. Everybody's experiencing the same thing. But everybody around us has raised their fees or their substitute pay rate. And so we've had a couple conversations with some of the subs that used to sub for us all the time and really enjoy subbing for us. But if they can go to Plumas Lake or they can go to the Marysville or they can go to the high school and make $170, then they're going to go there because it's more money. Especially if they're coming through Marysville, they're not going to drive here for less money. So we haven't come to the board for quite a while on raising the substitute pay rate, but this is what I'm doing today. So it would raise it for all, whether you're there one day or 20 days, to $175 a day.
And they work, what, 6 hours a day?
Well, that's
about 8 to 3.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they, sometimes it depends on the sub, right? We have subs that put in more time than that, but they're there, they're required to be there the school hours and typically a half hour before and a half hour after.
So how many hours?
Depends on the classroom, but I say anywhere between 7 to 7.5.
So this puts substitutes making more than several of our classified employees.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were before at 140. I mean, because at 140, if you took 7 hours, that they were making $20 an hour.
The Browns and Markham are also paying $175, so I know that there's a few people that come here that are going there to stand because it's closer and more.
Right.
Just for the price of gas.
Well, the Plumas Lake has hired one full-time, for lack of a better term, substitute per school site. And so they go every day and they get paid every day. And they're paying those people like $205 or something a day. And then they're
in a sub. Benefits too?
No, I don't think they're doing the benefits, which I'm not sure how they're getting away with that. But that's, that I asked that question. They said that we're not paying benefits. So.
No more conversation. I make a motion to increase the substitute pay rate.
First and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I know it passed, but I would be opposed if I had. I have a hard time having people who aren't our regular employees making more than a lot of. More than a handful of our classified employees.
And it does have to do with, you know, what they have to do to, they have to have their BA and they have to have all those things. So.
But now they don't have to have their CBEST. They don't have to go through any of that. All they have to have is their BA at this correct. Point. And I have a hard time with that. So that's,
I see your point, but I also build staffing every morning.
And I totally understand that. I worked out at the preschool for 15 days as a volunteer because there was no staff out there. And I have offered to fill in any holes that there are. I get that they're not there. But as just looking at our staff and our employees, I have a hard time. I have a hard time with that. We have custodians who make less than that an hour. We have, you know, groundspeople. We have, you know, it's hard for me to say. Granted, we need them to have our kids there. I get that, but it's just a personal thing for me. So anyway, with that, board comments. Okay. If no comments.
I don't see anything in the chat, right? Nothing?
Okay. We will adjourn our meeting and go into closed session. Thank you.